And the court will proceed to the fifth case, the United States v. Burnett. Mr. Daze?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Bill Daze for Indiana Federal Community Defenders. Our office represented the appellant, Mr. Burnett, by appointment before the district court and continued on appeal. The case is on direct appeal. This case went to trial. Mr. Burnett was convicted of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. His status as an armed career criminal resulted in a sentence of 192 months. The appeal raises only an issue of the district court's denial of a motion to suppress, submitted pre-trial and decided by the district court without conducting an evidentiary hearing. The essence of the argument is that the unwitting informant described in the police officer's affidavit, that her statement that she received the marijuana cigarette that she was caught with from Mr. Burnett and then she got it from inside the house, was not sufficiently reliable for a issuing magistrate to rely on, and that if it was reliable to the point, under all the circumstances, that the issuing judge could credit that statement, that it didn't establish a fair probability that more marijuana would be found within the residence.
Your main case you rely on is that Owens case, citing it because, you know, a quantity of marijuana or the amount of money was not listed in the affidavit. But here we had the sale that took place just the day before. And doesn't that distinguish it from Owens?
Oh, there's much about this case
that's
distinguishable from Owens.
He supplied it to her, and there was no gap between the search and the fact that the drugs were there. Plus, they had from the prior warrant recovered photos showing him posing with large amounts of marijuana. And so isn't Owens distinguishable?
It is, clearly, as the district court found. But it's applicable in one sense. First, the reference in the affidavit is to a search of a home 9 months earlier. Owens, in part, could stand for the proposition that without some quantity that was disclosed to the issuing judge, for all the magistrate knew, it was a very small amount. And indeed, it was in this case, as it turns out, less than 2 grams of marijuana seized 9 months earlier. So we would argue that the historical connection between this residence and drug dealing is very slight, and that Owens has some application to an inference that might be drawn from this search 9 months earlier. Indeed, it's true. The officer relays to the court that this happened 9 months earlier. There's marijuana, a large quantity of cash, and this photograph that the court has referenced. Mm-hmm. The officer then observes the residence, and he notices what he characterizes as very heavy vehicular traffic between quitting time, between the hours of 3 and 6, but without telling the magistrate what that means, whether very heavy is 2 or 20 or, you know, what that means. He tells the judge that an informant, whose reliability he doesn't attempt to establish, told him that Mr. Burnett likes to sell the women. On the day that the observations are made that result in the warrant, he says he sees at least two. He sees a car parked, and then he sees a second woman arrive. The car leaves. The officer concludes from, suspects that this person has just retrieved marijuana from Mr. Burnett's residence. He directs that the automobile be stopped. As a supplemental proffer to the court in support of the motion to suppress establishes, what they found was a single marijuana cigarette, less than a gram, in the ashtray. What the officer told the magistrate was is that searching the vehicle in areas where valuables are commonly kept, we discovered a quantity of fresh marijuana. Fresh, as best I can tell, distinguished it from already smoked. That is, there was a marijuana cigarette and there was a butt of a partially smoked cigarette in the vehicle. The proffer established this lady, the driver, was told that she was suspected of child endangerment because her child was seen out playing in the street unattended somewhere. But she indeed makes a statement, Big Mike gave it to me because that's how Big Mike is. So I suppose there's some talk, and the district court found this is a statement against penal interest, and therefore it's something that could be credited by the issuing magistrate, that it's probably true. She probably did get that joint from Big Mike, as she relayed. But we would argue to this court, as we did before the district court, that there's nothing about where she got it that's against penal interest. The lady just got caught with a marijuana cigarette. She had a suspended driver's license, and the specter is raised to a mother about her children playing in the street. That the impetus to truthfully tell a police officer where that cigarette came from has nothing to do with her penal interest, that there may be as much a reason to cast the direction away from the place where she had just, if she indeed had just retrieved the marijuana cigarette. An additional point is this, even if that's something that's reliable under all the circumstances that a court should consider, what about that raises the notion that there may be more marijuana found in the house? Less than 2 grams found 9 months earlier, less than a gram found in a car that had just left that residence. The other historical facts, and I suppose by analogy to Owens, don't establish some reason to believe that there's drug dealing going on, something that might generate a continued expectation that more marijuana would be on the residence, that there's some ongoing activity. The notion that what's absent is a statement that this person saw more marijuana in the house, that marijuana was offered for sale, that Big Mike told her there was more marijuana in the house. I mean, there's nothing like that. And so we argue that an inference, that a fair inference, that more marijuana would be found in the house wasn't something that could fairly be drawn from all the circumstances of the case. And indeed, what was recovered is about the most one might have expected from what the officer knew to be true. There was a total of 3 grams recovered from 3 different locations in the house at the time of the search. And so we would argue overall that the warrant was issued without probable cause and that the officer's omissions from the affidavit raise questions about good faith in its service that ought to have been addressed by an evidentiary hearing. I don't have any lights on, but we'll, unless the court has other questions, be seated. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tennessee. Mr. Schnellenberger.
May it please the court, my name is Todd Schellenberger. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of Indiana, and I represent the United States in this appeal. The judge that approved the search warrant in this case was provided with 2 strands of information supporting probable cause for a search. The search warrant in this case presented the Indiana judge with a combination of historical information and fresh observations that provided strong reasons to believe marijuana would be found in the house that Burnett was occupying. Counsel has raised the point about the reliability of the informant in this case. The key to judging the reliability rested on the fact that this informant was an unwitting informant who was surveilled at the house immediately before the warrant was applied for. Officers observed her come to the house, leave the house being escorted by Burnett, get into a car. They then do a traffic stop a distance away from the location. She is never aware that they are investigating Burnett and provides this information. It is against her penal interests, but it is corroborated by the law enforcement's observations during the surveillance. So I think that provides substantial credibility to the informant's information. The district court pointed to a number of reasons why there was probable cause established by this search warrant and cited 6 of them in its opinion. The residences that was subject to this search, historical link to marijuana, Burnett's link to the residence subject to search, Burnett's historical link to marijuana, heavy vehicle traffic at the search location.
What does heavy vehicle traffic mean?
Well, there isn't a number contained in the warrant, but I...
Well, I don't mean how many, but heavy vehicles stopping and going into the house or just driving by, or what does that mean?
I think reading the warrant as a whole, it indicates traffic stopping at the location because 2 vehicles are specifically noted stopping, and the warrant lays out the scenario in which the unwitting informant came to the location, stopped, went in, was observed being escorted out by Burnett, left and then was pulled over. And so the two detailed pieces of information about the traffic indicate a stopping, although there isn't a number listed in the warrant as to how many vehicles were there, or a statement that each vehicle stopped at the location. But I think it's reasonable to, for the Indiana judge to conclude that that heavy vehicle traffic meant comings and goings from the location. Burnett's, the district court in denying the motion to suppress cited Burnett's presence at the residence observed by the surveillance and the recent acquisition of marijuana from inside the residence and from Burnett personally.
Well, the informant didn't give any indication that additional marijuana was in the house or that she saw additional marijuana or money or anything. And counsel would argue that that wasn't enough.
Well, the counsel has argued and placed emphasis on whether, in a sense, whether or not there is probable cause to believe there was
additional marijuana
or marijuana dealing going on. And I think the proper question is whether or not there is probable cause to believe there may be more marijuana inside this house, rather than whether or not there's probable cause to establish that Burnett is dealing marijuana. And taking all of this information together, I think the court was correct in finding that there was probable cause to believe that there was some additional marijuana would be found inside this residence.
But the primary evidence all related to an incident that took place 9 months before.
That's correct, Your Honor. But it's a combination of current observations plus the past historical information taken together. And this court and other courts have emphasized that warrants are to be evaluated based on the totality of the circumstances, taking all the information as a whole. And this combination of historical information and current observations meet the probable cause threshold in this case. Even if if the court were to find that the warrant didn't quite reach the level of probable cause, the good faith exception would apply in this case. The counsel does not argue that the Indiana judge abandoned his neutral and detached role in evaluating the warrant, so he's left with arguing that the detective that submitted the warrant had no reasonable basis to believe that a judge could find there was probable cause in this case. And all of the six reasons cited by the district court in support of probable cause, I think, also support the notion that a reasonable officer would believe that this warrant was sufficient. And so the good faith exception would apply in the instance where a probable cause was not quite met. If there are no further questions, I'll rest on the brief and ask the court to affirm the
thank you, Mr. Schoenbarger.
Motion to suppress. Thank you.
Mr. Daisy? Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.